Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Welcome. Our guests tonight are Steve McDonald, news director of Channel 2 News, Jill Burke of the Alaska Dispatch, and from Washington, APRN's reporter Libby Casey. Steve, the ACLU filed suit against the municipality of Anchorage in a homeless case. This involves police raids on homeless camps. Tell us about it, and where might this go?
The ACLU filed a lawsuit on Wednesday against the city on behalf of a homeless man, as you said, Michael. It claims that the police raids on homeless camps last summer were a violation of the homeless constitutional rights. The police are acting under a law that was passed by the Assembly last July that allowed police officers to go into camps that are placed in illegal camps that are on parkland and woods, things like that, and basically post a 12-hour notice saying that the homeless camp had to be vacated within 12 hours. Failing that, the police came in and confiscated things like sleeping bags and tents and clothing and cleaned up the camp. And confiscated all of this material. According to the ACLU, a lot of this material, a lot of this property was destroyed or tossed away and not given back to the people who it belonged to. So the ACLU says that this is a violation of constitutional rights. The city says that this is a safety issue, that we have had well over a dozen people who have died of exposure and other issues, homeless people over the last year. They want to see these people in shelters. They want them to see, so want to see them cared for, and feel that camping on illegally on property is also it's illegal, and two, it's a health and safety risk. So they say that they have the right to go in there and clear out these camps. So now the upshot of this is the ACLU says it'll suspend its lawsuit if the city will put a moratorium on its raids. No more raids until we reach an adequate way of handling this, an agreement. Perhaps the ACLU is asking for like a two-week notice. The city says that's too long. We don't want to wait 2 weeks before we raid. The ACLU also wants to make sure that people get their property back when this is all said.
And this raises a larger question too, which is, these people have to live someplace. Camps or no camps is not much of a solution.
No, that's true. And obviously there's a question of whether or not there are enough facilities.
And if there will be.
In the city.
There's another lawsuit going on right now, and it's the many governors are suing the Obama administration over health care.
Right.
And we noticed this week that Governor Parnell has joined that suit at a bargain basement price.
Supposedly.
Tell us about that, and tell us how long this lawsuit could last.
Oh, this lawsuit could last. This will probably go to the Supreme Court, I would imagine. The state of Alaska is the 20th state to join this lawsuit against the Obama administration and the congressional approval of a health care reform bill that was signed into law here just recently. It's a question of constitutional rights, according to Governor Parnell, who, at the advice of his Attorney General Dan Sullivan, said that the state of Alaska should join this lawsuit. He used the analogy of forcing people to buy health care is like forcing people to join a gym. You know, it's not right, and this is an excessive use of power by Congress. So the state of Alaska has joined this suit, which is mainly made up of Republican governors from across the United States. And it was the state of Florida that came out and said, well, this should cost each state about $5,000 to mitigate this lawsuit. Senator Begich of Alaska, who voted in favor of health care reform, says, no, that's not the case. It's going to be more like $100,000 and a waste of time, because there are certainly plenty of examples where the federal government has exercised these types of powers and certainly been well within its legal right to do so.
And we might have another president, another Congress, or the legislation might have changed by the time this is resolved in some years.
That's true. That's true.
Libby, let's get you in here. What is Washington saying about these state suits?
Yeah, Steve said it well that the Democrats, including Senator Begich, are saying this is really a waste of money. And the spokesperson for the Democratic Party said that, especially at this time of an economic crisis, is this the way that money should be spent? And the White House has been very dismissive. Spokesman Robert Gibbs said right off the bat that the administration will win these suits. Now, we'll see what happens. As you mentioned, Michael, this fall at the election booth, today on NPR, the top Republican on the House, John Boehner, said if he gets control, if Republicans are able to take over the House, he would like to see the health care bill overturned. So there will be the political angle of this as well as the legal implication.
Thank you. This story has been overtaken by the oil rig explosion in the Gulf of Mexico, which has now endangers the coast of three states at the very least. Jill, you've taken a look at how this might apply to Alaska, the consequences, not the spill itself. Tell us, what have you learned? It's really quite a story.
Well, I think, you know, watching these images unfold and hearing the reports from the Gulf about the challenges of containing this leak just exacerbates nervousness and concerns that accidents happen. You know, with regardless of the best intentions and the best technology available, you can't prevent those accidents that may occur. And this is a great example of that. So here we're in deep waters in the Outer Continental Shelf in the south. But of course, in Alaska, people are increasingly interested in exploration and drilling in the OCS off of Alaska's northern shores. And in fact, we have companies that are poised to begin those projects. Shell this summer for an exploratory drilling project in the Chukchi Sea, and BP with an onshore rig that will drill extended reach out to an offshore prospect. And that's expected to start this fall. And then ConocoPhillips, the third company, has an existing lease and was hoping to see some kind of activity in 2012. So there's a lot of stake. They've spent millions and billions of dollars. And now there are these fears raised again by the general public and a lot of policymakers about whether or not the risks are worth the reward. And President Obama today announcing that he's going to require a 30-day report from the Interior Department about what additional safeguards or precautions must be in place as we consider additional leases. He's put a moratorium on existing leases. Future lease sales.
Is that what it was? It was a little confusing to me.
Yeah, that happened previously weeks ago as he said we need to re-review our environmental assessments and really know what we're looking at before we make future decisions. But through all of this discussion about the implications about whether or not we should tread more carefully out into these areas has been this undercurrent that absolutely domestic energy and energy resources are of huge consequence, not only to the state of Alaska, but to the nation as well. So nobody's saying we're going to pull the plug right now. But certainly there is this new injection of heightened concern about whether or not we're doing it as safely and responsibly as we can.
Great job. Thank you. Libby, give us the Washington perspective, please. And on Friday, there was a major news conference with all kinds of players. Tell us about that.
That's right. Coming from the White House, we had Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, the Homeland Security Secretary Jenna Napolitano, the head of the EPA, and NOAA all gathered to do a press conference in Louisiana to talk about this and really defend the federal response to this effort, because there have been questions about did they move in quickly enough? Has the response been adequate? As Jill mentioned, the key perhaps for Alaska is really what will this mean for the national policy? And Secretary Salazar has said that the Interior Department will have this Outer Continental Shelf Safety Board, and they'll make a report to the president in 30 days. I contacted the Interior Department right away and said, well, what does this mean for Alaska? Could things be on hold up there? Because the drilling season does start quite soon. And they have only said that we will know more after Salazar makes his report to the president in 30 days. And as Jill mentioned, the crux is, what is new drilling? I mean, if we're saying, if the administration is saying, and we're hearing no new drilling will go forward until there's an adequate review, what does that mean for the plans already in place this summer? And I think that has yet to play out.
Okay. Steve McDonald, if you look at the coverage in the newspapers, watch it on television, listen on NPR, there are some very clear echoes of the Exxon Valdez, which is now 22 years ago. I know you've been thinking about this, and you could tell us a little bit some of those echoes.
Well, it just brings back a lot of bad memories, of course. You know, we've started to see oiled birds show up in the media, videotape of that. I don't think the bad stuff has really showed up just yet. I mean, it's bad enough. We've lost nearly a dozen people, so that's bad, the human toll on this with this explosion. The environmental impact has yet to be fully felt. We have yet to see oil start hitting some of the beaches. We've got very sensitive environmental areas, places where you have shrimp fishermen who depend on their livelihood. There's a lot of parallels here to what happened here in 1989.
I might back up for a minute. So, I got it wrong. It's not 22 years. It's 1989, right?
1989.
Yeah.
Yes.
The other thing is that this is taking place in a media market totally unlike Alaska. And, I mean, even now we're seeing people are rushing to get the story.
Right.
And for the viewers, listeners, audience, at times it can be very confusing, except we know it's really bad.
It's very bad. It's also taking place in a very different technological era
too,
when you think about that. We didn't have the internet at the time. In 24-hour news cycles, we're pretty much confined to just to CNN mostly. You've got a lot more media out there. You've got instantaneous media. You've got so much more to deal with media-wise today than you did in 1989 with the Exxon Valdez. That'll play a different part. That'll make this seem a lot much more impactful, I guess, on the public as well.
And Michael, if I may just jump in
here,
environmental groups, of course, are jumping on this and saying, if this kind of thing happened in Alaska, the technological response would be nowhere near what they've been able to do in the Gulf. You know, they would not be able to get nearly as many spill response vehicles or containment booms up to the high north because it is just so far away and remote. And so that is giving fodder to their arguments that the Arctic needs to be a place where development is tread carefully.
Mm-hmm. And you can add into that the concerns about being able to clean up in cold water and freezing waters. It's a completely different ballgame. Oil behaves differently in the Arctic than it does in the warmer temperatures of the Gulf. And so,
not to mention what might happen off the coast of Barrow in December with the amount of daylight that they have there, meaning essentially none.
Right. Yeah. And we spoke to one environmentalist who's concerned and said, look, you have the potential to lose a large oil slick if it happens in the middle of the winter. It'll get trapped in the ice, but it's dark. You can't see it. You're not going to be able to do anything with it until spring. And that's a real potential. So I think that these conversations are going to be heightened, certainly. And there are existing lawsuits, or at least one existing lawsuit, which goes to oral argument before the Ninth Circuit this coming month in May, about whether or not the environmental assessments were done correctly by the Mineral Management Service affecting the Chukchi Sea. And I would expect to see that conversation now take an additional dimension of whether or not the risk assessments were vigorous enough in looking at whether or not there is a potential for a large oil spill in exploratory phases in Alaska.
Jill, we're going to stick with you, but first of all, this is Michael Carey. I'm here with Steve McDonald, Jill Burke, and Libby Casey. Jill, so-called 8A contracting is making news again. You did several stories on it. Native corporations are finding stiff resistance to the opportunities they've enjoyed under 8A, and one of the corporations has taken upon itself to file a libel suit. Tell us about these two big stories.
This is a slander and libel suit that's been filed against a reporter and who did some work. The story was carried by the San Francisco Chronicle, and so this reporter and the San Francisco Chronicle and that reporter's main entity have all been sued in Alaska federal court for libel and slander. It all stems from looking into stimulus money that was being spent in California, one of the most expensive projects there that also happened to make the list of Senator John McCain's most wasteful stimulus projects, and it just happened to have an Alaska Native company 8A connection. So this was building
Which company?
Saluda,
which corporation?
Which is a subsidiary of the Kuskokwim Corporation. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, the long story short, it's a $54 million award in the state of California awarded to this Alaska company to perform the work. And it was basically to perform some flood mitigation on the Napa Valley wine train. And so critics saw it as this kind of big boondoggle, and we're concerned that the Alaska Native Company wasn't really performing all of the work, was taking more of the profits than perhaps they were due, and that it really wasn't benefiting people the way that it was intended. Now, that having been said,
it had this perfect setup, right, of the California wine drinkers.
Like, it's this antique train where you get gourmet meals and champagne, and you're driving through, you know, wine country. And it was just investigated initially as taxpayer waste. You know, is this the appropriate way to be spending the public's money? Mm-hmm. In defense of the project, a lot of people came forward and said, look, this project existed long before the Stimulus Act came forward. This is part of a several-stage project for flood mitigation for the Napa Valley, which has caused millions and millions of dollars in repair needs over the years. These are important projects. This just happens to be the latest phase. So the company is fighting back. They filed this lawsuit, and they said, look, you, reporter, and the entities that carried this story slandered us. You unfairly characterized our CEO as a guy with a botched past in venture capitalism who, you know, maybe fudged some lobbying rules and government relationships to land these expensive contracts. And you made the company, Saludoc, look like we're not equipped or capable or skilled or deserving of these contracts, all of which is wrong. And we've had enough. So they're suing for about $32 million between the two of them in federal court.
And we do know from history that and from the law that libel cases are difficult to win and frequently are very expensive to pursue.
That's correct. And, you know, it's hard to prove that what you what was said, you know, truth, absolute, yes, this is true, no, this isn't true, is difficult in court.
And also that you may have done it unknowingly, wrongfully, or with malicious intent or things of that
That's
nature.
Right. That's another threshold that elevates it. So,
okay, Steve, Anchorage school teachers have signed a contract with the Anchorage School District. Mm-hmm. This is good news for on the labor front. How did this happen? It's kind of a surprise, I think.
It is, given what's happened over the last decade or so. The talks between the school district and its teachers over other contracts have been quite contentious. Threats of strikes, certainly arbitrators being called in to try and get both sides on the same level. But this one went pretty smoothly. They came to a tentative agreement 2 months before the contract actually was supposed to expire. It's a 3-year deal, an $1,800 raise the first year, 2% increase the second year, 3% increase the third year. The school district's going to have to do some cutting of its budget in order to make these numbers work. But Carol Como, the superintendent, she says that's what's going to happen. They're going to work on that. She's very happy that they've got this contract in place before the start of the next school year here in the fall.
So, a couple things, Steve. One, this will further contribute to the legend of Carol Como, its ability to smooth the waters.
Yes.
And I think that doesn't this really reflect a certain kind of amount of optimism about the future that they could come up with this money?
Yeah, I think it does. Yes. I think it does. I think, first of all, about the legend of Carol Como, yeah, she probably on track for sainthood about it at this point in time, I think. She has really done a very, very good job with
and
that
the public
school
knows
district.
That.
And the public does know that, and the district knows that. And she's a very insightful woman, and she's got the students' best interests at heart, I think, just watching her work. So, and I think it's partly, too, her credibility in all of this that helps bring this
That's a
all
real
together,
good point.
Too. I think, anyhow, I think that helps. I think it does say something about that. This is an investment in teachers. Teachers will tell you, we didn't get all the things that we wanted. I'm sure the district didn't either, but that's the nature of negotiating. You know, you put stuff on the table, the other side says, well, we want this, and you hopefully you meet someplace in the middle and you get most of what you want anyways. So, and I do think it is an investment in the future. Yeah. And there's some optimism there for folks.
Let's return to Libby Casey. Libby, what's happening with the climate change bill?
Michael, what climate change bill, I think, is what we're all asking this week. Just 1 week ago, everyone was ready and waiting for this climate bill to be unveiled. And now 1 week later, it's just sort of gone away. The top Democrat majority leader, Harry Reid, decided instead to push immigration legislation, and that had a really derailed everything because Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, a member of this key trio that's been crafting the climate change bill, pulled his support from it because Reid switched to immigration. Graham has been working with independent Joe Lieberman and Democrat John Kerry, and we're not really sure now where that's going to come. Senator Reid has backed off a little bit and said that the bill can come up. But you know, once the Democrats still unveiled some of their immigration policy goals this week. So we're still waiting. How the Alaska senators would vote on climate change, we don't really know yet because we haven't seen all the details, and they're withholding their comments until they come out. But word is that it would include the energy title that came out of Senator Murkowski's energy committee that she has given her support to. Now, Murkowski was very critical of Senator Reid's negotiation tactics this week and said that it was a very poor decision on his part to essentially pull the rug out from under Senator Graham. So we are all waiting to see what happens. And immigration is just an idea at this point, whereas the climate bill was actually something that was turning out to be on paper. And so a lot of people are saying, why switch directions? It's just political. Why switch directions when you could actually have a viable bill on the floor and something that could get worked through in the next 6 months or so?
Libby, let's stick with immigration for a minute. There's been so much noise on that subject recently, especially with the Arizona legislature and governor's decision to implement their own bill. What's the Alaska delegation saying, if anything?
Yeah, Senator Begich's office says that jobs and energy issues should be tackled first, and although he does want to see immigration reform, and of course, what does that really mean yet, now is not the time. And Senator Murkowski says that she will, under no circumstances, support amnesty, which is something that is being talked about and on the table. And she believes the Democrats are putting forth partisan ideas that aren't really going to be something that Republicans can get involved in negotiating. So people down here don't really see immigration reform, so to speak, as moving anywhere in the near future.
And once again, we hear from senators over and over again, conceptually, I'm very much in favor of this idea, but I'm really afraid of the specifics or words to that effect. Steve, what's the latest, going back to our former governor on the Sarah Palin hacker trial?
Yeah, well, we're taping here on a Friday afternoon, and before we started taping, a federal jury found David Kernell, I think he's 28-year-old former college student from University of Tennessee, found him guilty on two counts of hacking into vice presidential candidate at the time, Sarah Palin, and governor, Sarah Palin's email account. The jury convicted Kernell of unauthorized access to a computer and obstruction of justice.
If I might, how many charges were there?
Was it four altogether.
Okay.
They hung on one, found him not guilty on another, and he could face a possibility of 20 years could face 20 years based on the two charges that he was found guilty of.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and this just came down.
But of course, there'll be federal guidelines for sentencing and a whole lot of other things,
true,
too.
Yeah, his attorneys are going to argue, just as they did in trial, that this was a prank that went bad.
A good young man went awry. Okay, Jill, the headlines on one of your stories says, offshore oil fuels Don Young and Murkowski's campaigns. This may come as a surprise to some of our viewers, some not. Tell us about it.
Okay, I want to just add one thing quickly about Palin, if that's okay. It's interesting this week. She's been silent on the Deepwater Horizon accident in the Gulf. And, of course, it was kind of her camp that coined drill, baby, drill.
And yet
we did see her. It's my understanding. I didn't see it personally, but that she did come out and make some statements regarding the immigration reform attempts. So it's interesting what she's choosing to talk about and stay silent on.
And just a correction, something I just said. I said Kernell was 28. He's 20. Check my notes again, too. So he's a 20-year-old former college student at Tennessee. So I just want to throw that in there as well.
So the offshore oil money making its way into the campaigns. One of the ships that Shell has commissioned to do its drilling in the Arctic is the state-of-the-art vessel from down south. And the company that manufactures it, Choest Marine, has donated, or employees of that company have donated substantially to Senator Murkowski. I mean, upwards of, I believe, of $60,000 or $70,000. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. It might be higher.
It probably changes.
Yeah, and it came in a series of donations within the last 6 months. And so it's just kind of a tangential relationship. You know, that was a huge money-making project for that marine vessel company. They see themselves, hopefully, as having more work to do up in Arctic waters. So we did ask them for comment about why some of their owners and employees were choosing to, you know, make their voice heard through those donations, and we didn't hear anything back specifically. But it's just an example of how the stakes are high, I think, and people are putting their money into candidates that they feel are valuable for them for their long-term goals.
Yes, and that they've done that before and probably will continue to do it again. Libby, let's get you back in here one more time. It's the 50th anniversary of the creation of ANWR, originally known as the Arctic National Wildlife Range, and environmentalists and some of their allies in Congress are celebrating or marking the anniversary. What are they saying?
That's right. They kicked off a big event here in Washington yesterday, and this will run through December when it's a true anniversary, when President Eisenhower created the initial part of the refuge. And the Alaska delegation was notably absent. They are not part of this effort because, of course, they want to see development in the Arctic Refuge. Instead, we had on Congressman Ed Markey from Massachusetts, one of the leading advocates of protecting the refuge, as well as the Udall cousins, the senators from New Mexico and Colorado, and they bring a lot of environmental credentials to the table as well as some development prospects. So their voices may have a little more power in the Senate than Congressman Markey's had over the years in the House. They want to see actual protection for the refuge, complete protection, and they say we can move forward on it. Now, will they be able to is totally a different story. There does not seem to be any additional movement on that at this time, but they're going to try to use this anniversary year as a way to gain momentum and attention to the refuge.
And we're about out of time, but we should note that in 1960, it was the original range was created by a Republican administration, and especially instrumental was Secretary of the Interior Fred Seaton at that time. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.